Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Eat Local New York podcast. I'm your host, Anthony Tringale. And in this week's episode, I am sitting down and talking with Courtney Benson. She is the owner of Viticulture and Brick and Ivy out in Rochester, New York, both of which are on the Eat Local New York card. Well, you know, there's some restaurants that join the Eat Local New York card. We reach out to them via Instagram or Facebook or email or however we reach out to them. Some of them reach out to us, but there's a lot that we reach out to on Instagram and a lot that, you know, we just have never been to before. And well, Viticulture is one of them, and so is Brick and Ivy, but just places that we would message on Instagram and just say, hey, we'd love for you to join. It's free, and we just want to help promote you, and we just haven't been out there to visit the restaurant yet. And this is one of those cases. So Courtney's been great from the very beginning. You know, she was excited about joining the card and getting, especially once Brick and Ivy opened up her second restaurant, and you'll hear more about her journey and the restaurant openings here in this podcast. But Courtney's just been one of those really kind of great supporters of being on the card. And it's, you know, coming from our end where we're not really sure who's using the card, where, and all that kind of stuff. It's really encouraging to meet an owner like Courtney who's excited about the Eat Local New York program. And so anyways, it was a pleasure to drive out there and meet up with her and be able to go into Viticulture and sit down and have this conversation with her on the podcast. And meeting Courtney and getting to know just a tiny little bit about her was really encouraging and inspiring to see just this really successful, competent, confident woman who's running a restaurant today in New York State. So I'm excited for this podcast, and I hope that you really enjoy listening to it. Without further ado, here is my conversation with Courtney Benson. All right, so how long have you been in business here?
So I opened this 4 days before COVID last year.
Wow.
Yeah, and then we shut down 4 days later and didn't open back up till the middle of June and then shut down again in December. So we're about to be approaching year two.
Wow.
Right, March 22 coming up. Yep, yeah. two years, yeah.
What had you been doing before this?
So I am a real estate agent.
Oh, cool.
So I used to own properties and flip houses and stuff like that. And then prior to that, I was the operations manager for LA Fitness around Equate.
Okay.
And then prior to that, I worked at Paychex for about 4 years in different positions.
Yeah. What made you want to get into restaurants and food service?
So when I went to college, I was into hospitality and things like that. I interned for Matthew Robbins. He's like this big event planner. He was like Martha Stewart's number one go-to event planner. Mm. And I did a $1 million wedding at the Plaza Hotel.
Wow.
And it was gorgeous. So just being interested in stuff like that. So initially the dream was to open an event space or a wedding venue space. And that just kind of transitioned through different encounters and experiences to lead me to owning Viticulture and now Brick and Ivy, the restaurant.
Yeah. You're the third person I've met in the past 2 years, I'd say, who were in big events in New York City.
Oh, yeah.
And I've only thought that I'd ever meet one, and now I'm at three, so.
Yeah, no, it was a great experience. I was in college. I was just happy to be there, you know? And
yeah,
then you're
sure.
Like, and it's, you see how much time and effort actually goes into it, and hours of labor and creativity, and just really pinpointing, you know, people's desires and what they're interested in, and making something, a product that people are gonna like, so.
Yeah.
It's actually quite interesting.
I bet, yeah. I grew up in church, and so, and like volunteering in it, and then I lived out in Central Texas for a couple years, and worked for a mega church out there as their production manager.
Nice.
And yeah, it's extremely fun to be involved in productions and events.
Yeah.
And planning stuff like
where
that.
Where do you go to church now, if you don't mind me asking?
I don't anymore.
Oh, well, there you go.
I have my bachelor's in theology. And then when I moved back, you know, I grew up in Syracuse. And Syracuse, with the exception of Abundant Life, if you're familiar with that, that's like the big church in Syracuse. Mm-hmm. So with the exception of that, Everything in Syracuse is small. You know?
Oh, okay. Yeah. And yeah, Syracuse I hear is quite boring, no?
Yeah. As a whole or the church culture?
Oh, no, no. As a whole, not a church culture. But as a whole, I hear that it's pretty boring city. I don't think I've ever gone out. I've been to concerts and things and games, but I've never just gone to go.
Yeah. I always tell people Syracuse is 10 years behind, maybe 5 years behind Buffalo and Rochester, which that means it's probably 20 years behind New York City and what the rest of the world is doing. So Syracuse is definitely, here's a great example. I was just watching this interview of this restaurant owner in New York City who has a made-to-order dumpling shop, and it's completely touchless. So there's a staff that are making dumplings as they're being ordered, but as a consumer, you can only order online, or you go in and you scan, you use their tablet, and then they put everything in heated or cooled lockers. You get a barcode, you scan your barcode, and then that's how you unlock it to get your food out. I showed that to restaurant owners in Syracuse today, this morning as I was running around, and they're like, "Yeah, that's awful. That'll never happen around here." That's kind of sums up Syracuse.
But you know what? It's so interesting because I wonder if that's going to be the direction of restaurants. Because honestly, the employee cost is almost like owning these businesses are getting rid of employees and replacing them with machinery or equipment or technology. And the amount of income that is necessary for back of house and front of house staff. It's just I know a restaurant here, Richmond's, I believe they were doing where they didn't have any front of house staff. So you're making your order and then they're bringing the food out to you from the back and cutting that cost. Because in order for restaurants to thrive, especially during this time, it is kind of getting to that point, I feel like.
Yeah.
And when you think about it, they're cutting out so many different middlemans by just having the food made and then you come and get your food. I mean, obviously though, people are still looking for that experience to come and sit down. So that's the only part that would lack, but I wonder if that's the direction that it's going.
But it's what is that experience that you're getting from your server? I mean, I usually leave a restaurant. I'm either thinking all right, that service was bad. They weren't enthusiastic, and not that I'm looking for, I forget the name of that movie where they had the flare on there, those pins on there, suspenders, the old Applebee's model or TGI Fridays. I'm not looking for that, but unless you have for enthusiasm, but unless you have somebody who's attentive and, what is that experience you're getting from your server? Most of it's there's some cool stuff in Syracuse. There's a lot of cool stuff in Syracuse, but one of them that just opened up during COVID was called Three Lives. And it's a video game, arcade bar and restaurant. Mm-hmm. They're 100% in with that theme. You go in, you get your ID scanned, and they put you in their rewards program. But everything is video game themed. So then all of a sudden, you level up. And when you hit level 10, they send you on quests. And that one of those quests could be order this drink off the menu. And the bartenders are called alchemists. And they've got these little potion bottles. I mean,
they're all in.
They've taken it to, the top. And it's legit. You go in there and you never have a bad time.
Oh, that's awesome.
So there are cool spots like that. But yeah, for the most part, a lot of it is, still old school out in Syracuse.
Yeah, I have to get out there.
So, did you always want to have a wine bar, or was it just kind of the opportunity came up? And
The opportunity came up. We went to go look at a restaurant that ended up being for sale that we thought initially was the building, because it was actually accidentally put on LoopNet for sale. So we were like, oh my gosh, and I was a real estate agent. And then we kind of sat with the owner, and that just didn't work out. And then an opportunity for a wine bar here in Rochester that was also the building and the wine bar was to sell.
Okay.
And we were going to do that, and then that didn't work out. And then I was just like, you know what? I kind of want to get into this, and I feel like a wine bar is easy, scalable enough to start out before fully jumping into a full-blown restaurant, so taking that on without that experience. So that's what led it here.
Yeah,
and it's just been a good time ever since. Brick and Ivy, you can definitely see the difference between a full-blown restaurant and a wine bar that requires maybe one or two people to function versus an entire team.
Yeah.
So many different learning experiences, but people seem to like the product, so that's like the good thing.
Yeah. Well, so how did Brick and Ivy come about?
Brick and Ivy, I had the name and the concept. Initially, it was probably going to be an event space turned then into a restaurant. But since last September, and then it wasn't until this April, and I had been pondering, like, what am I going to do next? Like, am I going to do this? I had already owned the LLC, and I'm just like, I wasn't, like, in a rush for anything, just trying to let life come to me. And then a random realtor at the time, who my good friend David now, who I had never met before, reached out to me saying he came across viticulture and had a spot out in Fairport, thought it would be good for this concept if I was ever looking to open up a second viticulture or another business instead. And then I was just like, actually, yeah. And then I went out there. And then that spot, it didn't actually work out. I was literally getting, like, did all the work for and everything, going to sign. Day of signing, he mentioned another spot here on South Clinton that he had just acquired. And literally, I, like, put down the pen. I was like, oh, do you have photos? Da, da, da. He showed me the photos. And then I was like, can we go see that today? He's like, well, like, in addition to this, because we had just did all this work, like, to, you know, for this deal. And I was just like, ah, yeah, maybe. And then we go there, and I was like, yes, I'm not going to sign that lease over there. I actually want this spot. So, like, what do we got to do to get it? And it just didn't, it felt so much better. I was, like, had so much anxiety, I feel like, prior to that.
Yeah.
And it just, like, it worked out how it was supposed to.
That's cool.
Yeah.
I'd imagine it's got to be, got to feel pretty good to be a business owner, have somebody approach you and say, hey, I love what you did, like, at this spot. I think you'd handle this one.
Yeah, viticulture has gotten so many. We were in the top 30 coolest spaces of Rochester, New York.
Awesome.
Up there with like Mercantile on Main and Parcels 5.
Wow.
And so that's like such an honor that, and you had to be nominated, and there was tons of nominations. So I don't know who nominated me, but I'm very grateful and appreciative. and out of all these, you know, different entries of all the different places in Rochester, viticulture was one of them. So. And on Yelp, you know, we had our nothing but 5-star reviews. They sent out a thing or whatever. I think our stickers on the door. So it's just nice that people enjoy it and they like the product. So I'm very grateful.
Yeah, that's awesome. So here it's strictly wine. You do food here?
Yeah, we do small plates type things. So we have like a shrimp cocktail, a soft pretzel with spicy mustard, cream cheese. Mini desserts, chips, peanuts. We do have the pizzas, which those are getting transitioned out, so we're going to be switching it up a little bit.
That's cool.
But just small things.
Yeah.
But nothing that has to be like, there's no like full kitchen.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
So not like over there where you're getting lamb chops or duck legs and things like that. But and we sell beer too.
Oh, here. Cool. Yeah.
Wine and beer.
So, what's that? What's the mindset difference between here and Brick and Ivy?
Oh, Brick and Ivy is a whole different animal.
Do you like one better than the other?
No. I like them both equally the same, but they are just different. You can definitely tell, like, getting into a full restaurant where there's like multiple people versus just, you know, one or two people.
Yeah.
So that would be the only difference. Really, I would think, but as far, and then I just, so kind of how my life goal has transitioned is that I kind of want to own multiple hospitality places that have different vibes, and so Brick and Ivy has like a different feel over there than the feel that's over here, so I think that's like the best part about it too, like when COVID first happened and it shut down and no one had anywhere to go, I just came and sat in here and had my glass of drink, like, oh, people are stuck in the house, I was like, you know what, let me just come in here and I'm going to go out for the night, you know, and this is my goal. So it's like nice to be able to have two different places that I can go to.
Yeah, for sure. So multiple different restaurants and food service spots that have different vibes and feels to them, huh?
Yeah. There's a lot of that here in Rochester. The gentlemen who own Ox and Stone and Swan Dive, they own Burns and all that. That's awesome. And then you got the guys over at Good Luck who also own Lucky's and the Jackrabbit, and you know, it's just like, I feel like if you have that mindset for it to create and that creativity behind it, I think that's like really cool, and people, if they enjoy it, then that's the best part about it.
Yeah. Have you always, I mean, like growing up, were you in like working in restaurants, your family grew up in food service?
Not at all. I did not, my grandmother ran a daycare. Okay. She did childcare for all of my life. And then my mom worked in different fields, but no, I just enjoyed going out and things like that. And like, as soon as I graduated from Brockport High School, and then I moved to New York City for school. I went to 4 universities in 4 years.
Oh, really?
Yep. But the first 2 were in New York or New York City, I should say. And I just, I like that energy.
Yeah.
And I like going out. I like restaurants. I like food. I like entertainment. But more so, I like the creative side of it. I think like my long-term goal is if, you know, I get to retire young, you know, that's everyone's dream, to retire young. But if I got to retire or do something, I would switch to doing business consulting.
Yeah.
And that's the part that I love the most,
mm-hmm.
like the buildup.
Yeah.
Like building it, creating it, designing it, creating the name, creating the concept, creating the identity, creating the brand, creating the culture.
Yeah.
That's the part that I enjoy the most.
Yeah. So what's it like? Do you have a team you have like a management team that's like helping to run both? Are you doing it?
It's me. But yeah, that's growing to other people. But, you know, my chef over at Brick and Ivy is definitely a huge, part of that. Africa is amazing, and obviously he is the core because food comes from him, so that is that. But as far as it's just me. I do the social medias and things like that. I do my liquor licensing myself and things like that, so
that's a lot.
Yes, it is. So now I'm branching out, getting different team members, building a team to take on different things at different locations. And that was always the plan, to create that team.
I've got a friend, and it's a ramen shop back in Syracuse, and
you had ramen next door.
You know, I saw that, so I was looking at restaurants that are in the area to grab lunch while I'm here, and I saw that place. Is it any good?
He is, but this location isn't open right now. His other one is on State Street. Two locations, and this one isn't it. But yeah,
I'm gonna have to check it out.
Yeah. If you like that, Pokey just opened up on South Ave there.
Okay.
And I heard it's amazing.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah. There's a good variety in Syracuse. Nothing too crazy. Like, if you want to get, like, there's some great Ethiopian restaurants, but they're like holes in the wall, you know?
Mm-hmm.
My buddy Kyle, who's doing Kasai, or owns Kasai, they just had their 3-year anniversary. He's opening 3 new restaurants in the next year. Like,
wow.
I mean, it's nuts. He's got it'll be called Tap House, and that's going to be beer, like a little upscale beer and wine. He's opening up a sourdough bakery right next to that, and then he's opening up like a legit cheesesteak shop, and all in Armory Square, so all within like a block of each other.
Oh, wow.
But it's interesting to see the mindset change from like having one spot where I typically know him as being in the kitchen online cooking at Kasai, to then all of a sudden see that shift where now he's making these executive level decisions and having to get this huge staff and figure, you know, it's pretty insane.
There's a whole, I have to remember the name of the book, but they talk about the different mindsets of business, and there's the 4 levels of entrepreneur, manager, employee, and technician.
Oh,
or technician,
the E-Myth.
Yes, the E-Myth.
I'm almost done with it.
Yeah. Love that book. And thank you. It's been forever since someone has told me the name, and I'm like, I know the book, but I cannot think of the name. And so, it is. It is that transitional part, and then and getting out of that, because then I feel like a lot of business owners, you end up stuck in the business.
Yeah.
If being able to go and have all those different 3, that just takes it to like a different level.
So for Eat Local, our business, it's kind of 3 sides. We have the card, obviously, that we sell. We have a content side, which is like this, and you know, the photos that we take. We've just brought on a couple freelance bloggers, start putting content out for us. And then we have a third side, which is marketing. So we do the marketing for, handle the marketing for, I think 17 restaurants now. Restaurants, a couple, like we just finished a couple political campaigns and all that kind of stuff. And I always say we, it's me. It's just I. Yeah. I always, for some reason, I've always been in the habit of saying we. And yeah. People especially now are asking me like, well, who is this we? Because for our clients, we're doing, I'm doing video production, photography, podcasting, their social ad. I mean, it's, mm-hmm. You know, it's too much.
Yeah.
And I've always had the goal of, in my head at least, of building it and selling it. You know, mm-hmm. Or building it and turning it on yeah. Autopilot. And so I'm kind of in, like, I've always been in the mindset of grab it. Like, if there's a dollar out there and you can grab that gig, do that job, pick up this client, just take it and figure it out. And now I'm, yeah. Yeah. My friend, Jeff, who is, one of the partners, founders in Digital Hive, which they have an agency here and in Syracuse. And, but he just sold. And so he just suggested this book called Built to Sell. And so I'm listening to that. Nice. And I listen to that book.
And that
yeah, Built to Sell is a really solid book. Do you do audio books or you read them?
I do both.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm audio book. I can't like, I just, there's something about it. I can't sit there. If I'm sitting on my couch or wherever reading for 10 minutes, I'm like, okay, I could have been doing a social post or editing this blog or whatever. So I do audiobooks. The audiobook is rough. I'm just putting it out. The guy who reads it is awful.
Oh,
But you get after, so I had to get past that. But it's a great book that's just talking about streamlining the business, figuring out the parts of it that should be grown to sell.
Mm-hmm.
And I can say from like a new business owner, I'm looking at my marketing side of the business. I'm like, all right, this is stupid. Why am I focusing on building this?
Mm.
This is the part of it. Like, it's all me.
Yeah.
No one could ever buy that or would ever want to buy that.
It. Yeah.
That where it's one person, you know, doing it. Mm-hmm. So I'm starting to notice those things and
just different things that make your business more sellable.
Yeah.
Like, you know, if you can have reoccurring EFTs or different like things like that, or multiple sources of income, not just from selling food and liquor.
Yeah.
Do you do events? Do you do this? Like whatever. Right. So, those are definitely the ways to make the business more appealing to the eyes if you're looking to sell it. Yeah, it is. It's hard to transition from the one-man show because then you have to, one, find people who are capable, and then, two, not only are they capable, but willing to treat it like it's theirs.
Yeah.
Yep, and that's, like, the biggest part because no one's ever going to really go the extra mile for something that's not theirs. So then, you know, then you're constantly transitioning, and they say one of the biggest expenses in business is hiring and firing.
For sure.
You know, so every time you hire someone, you got to fire them or they leave, whichever the case may be.
Yeah.
It's just like you've wasted so much energy and commitment and money into developing that person, and then now you got to redo it all over again.
Yeah.
But I always say we too. Like, even though it's I know for a fact, like my friends, my family, it's never just like me. Like, I mean, it's me. For the most part, if you want to like look at certain things, but in all, like it's definitely a team support effort, and I'm always constantly leaning on people, whether it's just for mental support or just like whatever. Like, oh yeah, you know, this is just good to have these people. So yeah, but it definitely you gotta work for it.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, we last year we did a project with a client, and they started a ghost kitchen. It was the first ghost kitchen in Syracuse. And she had a old bar that hadn't been used in about a year, but that had a kitchen. So she had the concept for it, and we helped her build out the brand and the name and then do the social. And it was a lot of fun. I mean, it was, we called it Mad Burger.
Oh, nice.
It was just like 7 or 8 over the top, you know, burgers, delivery only, obviously. Mm-hmm. And they were only open for 2 weeks, and then they closed down because of staffing.
Oh, yeah. so many businesses, it wasn't due to lack of interest or people. Right. It's literally staffing.
Yeah.
It's literally staffing. It's very interesting to see. And coming from like a more of a corporate type jobs and things like that to the restaurant industry, you definitely see a difference in employees and management styles and things that work for restaurant people versus working in the corporate world and just the structure of it. So, yeah, that is definitely a thing.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, it's just about finding the right people, which takes time.
Mm-hmm.
And then honestly, understanding that changeover is inevitable in the industry. So it's not, but it's just managing it and minimizing it as much as possible.
Yeah. No. I feel like you would probably get this because I have this concept, like, I don't really see it in a lot of local restaurants in Syracuse. I see it more in the corporate world and you know, honestly, I've spent my fair share in working for companies and they don't even do it. But having some sort of a training program or like clear path forward for promotions or advancement, like that's one thing I don't see in restaurants unless it's a national chain. And that is you can start here, but you can get there. You know, like here's the metrics you need to hit. Here's, you know, here are the time you have to put in. Like if you want to start as a dishwasher, but you want to get to a manager, front of house manager or chef or whatever it is.
So I can definitely see that. And that I don't know why it's more easier in a chain than normal, but there's something, I think there's a book on it and my chef talks about it, but there's something in the restaurant industry called line cook mentality.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's what happens is that a lot of the people, they actually don't necessarily even put out there that they want upward mobility.
Hmm.
It's almost like they're just taking a job to take a job.
Yeah.
And then you have to look at the people that work in the restaurant industry, typically younger, typically mm-hmm. college, typically whatever. And not all cases, obviously.
Yeah.
But when you think about people who are starting off servers, they're usually younger, or bartenders and things like that.
Hmm.
Unless you're someone who's seasoned or experienced, and then obviously you're comfortable if you've gotten to that level, then that's where you want to be. But there's something called a line cook mentality in which, you know, for whatever reason, they're content because when you think about it, they actually make decent money, maybe not to get rich, but they actually make good money.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And so when you're like, oh, I make this amount of money, I can do this and I can go anywhere to do it because there's such a need for it.
Right.
It's just like, well, then what's the encouragement to go higher in their own mindset?
Yeah.
You know? But yeah, I mean, I definitely try to encourage that. I am a big believer in people becoming, when I hire someone, I don't expect them to work for me forever.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone has their own, you know, dreams. I tell anyone that if I bring a manager on, like one of the questions that I typically ask in an interview is like, what do you want to be?
Mm-hmm.
What do you want to do? What is your actual like goal?
Yeah.
You know, it's just if they don't say, oh, to be a manager of a restaurant, I don't like not hire them because I know that everyone has their own aspirations and I'm all for people, you know, getting to what it is that they want to do. So if you want to own your own restaurant one day, you know, ask me whatever you want to ask me, you know, I'll give you the tools. And I always find that interesting too, because a lot of people I feel like don't like sharing information, which I think is so interesting because what I've learned is that you can give people information until they're blue in the face. Doesn't mean that they can use it or that, you know, and you shouldn't have fear that someone else can do what you can do. You should be confident enough that if you're doing it because you can. And if they go and do it, great for them. But so I'm just a big believer in helping everyone get to whatever it is that goal is that they want to get to. So that is something I always ask, like, what do you want to do?
Ideas aren't really like the thing that makes people successful or
oh my god, I have 50 million and honestly, like you said, honestly, with Viticulture and Brick and Ivy, I'm fortunate enough to get many opportunities presented to me now.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people presenting, do you want to do this, do you want to do that, or I have this or that. And then it's knowing like, okay, well, how much can you actually handle?
Right.
And turning away and knowing that, you know, sometimes timing is important.
Yeah.
And growth is important. So all those things are like factors, but yeah.
It's what made like, how old are you?
29.
Jesus Christ.
I just turned 29 in June.
I'm 35. It's always painful. I mean, this is a compliment, but yeah, it's like, you know, I'm not usually a big pop music fan, but I was really intrigued that Taylor Swift just did a 10-minute song on SNL.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Like she did the extended cut that's 10 minutes long.
Oh, wow.
And performed the entire thing on set as one of her two songs. And so I would watch that, and then I was like, all right, I'll listen to the album. So I'm listening to the album last night as I'm working. And then I was like, how old is Taylor Swift? She's 31 years old. I'm like, Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
I'm 35. You know, like to meet people that are my age, like it's one thing, like, all right, you know, you're a little bit younger, but especially when I meet somebody who's like around my age and they've got like two restaurants, I'm like, oh God, what have I done with my life?
Then look, on the alternative side, sometimes I'm like in it and I'm like, oh my God, what have I done with my life? Like, how did I throw myself into this? Like, oh my gosh, I can't believe it.
Yeah.
So it's always about perspective. And that's one thing that I try to really focus on is perspective, because people, you know, I am very grateful and very fortunate, very blessed to be doing what I'm doing, but it doesn't come without sacrifice cost and hard work. So it's always, you know, the grass always looks greener. But
yeah, without a doubt.
Yeah.
Listen, I don't ever want to own a restaurant.
Yeah.
I'm not falling for that trick.
Yeah.
We had a friend during the during the early days of the pandemic when everybody was at home. Like most people, I was jumping like heavy into, I'm either going to make really great bread or pizza or whatever. So I was focused on trying to make really great pizza at home. Mm-hmm. And I would always post pictures, and we have this friend of the family, and she would always comment. So my dad has owned multiple restaurants and always in a kitchen or something. So she would comment on my posts on Facebook, and she'd be like, oh, you've got to open a restaurant one day. It's in your blood. And it used to always just really piss me off. I'd be like, you know. And finally one day I said, listen, I wouldn't wish restaurant ownership on my worst enemy.
Yeah.
It is
intense.
You know, the like arguably one of the worst things that you could do.
Well, I don't think it's the worst. I can enjoy it. I do think every day is like exciting or whatever, but maybe over time I'll get the way. There's a book that I'm getting ready to start called Setting the Table.
Oh, yeah. Danny Myers.
Yeah.
You're unique though, because like you have, like you're coming from, you know, a corporate world, right? Mm-hmm. Real estate. Mm-hmm. And you're coming into this having read a business book. Most restaurant owners don't know how to spell business book, let alone have they read one, you know?
I definitely read different stuff. I definitely have different business experience with different businesses and different fields, gyms, cleaning businesses and stuff in the past that I helped build and create or assist with. So it really is that entrepreneur side of it. But it's like you said, I feel like one day, like my goal is to not necessarily own anything, but just help build businesses for other people.
Yeah, that's cool.
So that is the goal.
Yeah. Yeah, my goal
is... Can't do it until I do it myself, though. So
yeah.
That's where I'm at right now.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. Well, listen, thanks so much for having me out and for doing this.
Yes,
and
I'm glad I
finally got out here, you know, to check it out. And we'll come back, you know, sometime on a weekend and come in as a customer. But
come, and then you got to get to Brick and Ivy and eat some food.
Yeah. So where can people find more about the restaurant and about the wine bar?
So you're going to go to Viticulture, VITICULTURE ROC.com. And that's our website. We're actually rolling out some new memberships as well. So you'll be able to get, for $20 a month, it'll come out on the 1st of each month, but you'll be able to come in and get 3 glasses of any of our by the glass pours, whenever you want. There's also a bottle membership. We're also doing a book club that's getting ready to start once a month, on a book, and coming in, you'll receive a certain glass and dessert with it. And then for Brick and Ivy, social media, obviously, our Instagram, our Facebook, and then Brick and Ivy as well. It's BrickandIvyROC.com. And you can follow us on our social medias as well to see what we got going on.
Sweet. Well, thank you so much.
Well, thanks for having me.
Yeah. Hey, well, there it is. Thanks for listening to the podcast. And make sure you're subscribed, whatever platform you're listening to this on. It just means that you're going to get an update whenever a new episode's released. Don't forget to leave us a review. Let us know what you think of the Eat Local New York podcast. And visit us online at eatlocalnewyork.com. You can find our blogs. You can find links to our podcasts, to our YouTube channel. You can buy your Eat Local New York card and see the full list of participating restaurants that accept the Eat Local New York card. We're up over 160 right now all across the state, and we're really excited about that. So thanks again for listening to the podcast. We're going to catch you next week right here on the Eat Local New York podcast.